Panel is The Future of Network Computing, Where the Next 5 Years Will Take Us. And so we have a distinguished panel with us here, returning from last night, Mr. Forno, and then if everybody else would introduce themselves along the way.
Starting with you.
Your mic will be on.
Dumbass boy
is
starting down there.
You should just talk into it. That works.
Gee, thank you very much.
Yeah, I'll just leave it. You can leave
it
in
there. Jackass myself. Wait, this is on. Oh, damn.
Yeah, it's on.
I'm Tracer.
Yay. All that to work.
Oh, Nate.
All
right, are you done? Are you done?
Yeah, I don't want to talk very much. Build up.
Cool. I'm special because Nate's moving my mic stand for me. I'm myself, although he likes to call me Nate, even though I don't know where that came from. I'm like a telco guy, even though my paycheck doesn't really come from them. I like to indirectly convince them that I'm doing work and get paid for it. When really what I'm doing is sitting in their buildings reading manuals, like on the can. And it's pretty cool. I do telco stuff.
Yeah. I'm Simon Nynix, and I drink beer.
I'm bubonic, and I have a high interest in computers.
I'm sodium, and I'm squatting on this panel.
I'm Andrew Hobgood, and I actually have a real name.
And no numbers.
All right, if we couldn't be more broad.
Not as broad as you, Nick.
Oh, thank you. Actually, can we get rid of that like little feedback?
Can we get rid of the generator out of my eyes?
Okay. To pose the first question,
generators outside.
When it comes to network computing and looking at the future, what kinds of technologies should we be looking at? Like, what do you think, what technologies will be leading the future of network computing? Starting off with, let's start with Andrew.
Trust. Evaluating who we can trust, what computers we can trust. As networks become ubiquitous, that's going to be the real focus.
Sodium?
He's too drunk to answer.
He is the weakest link.
Goodbye.
Sodium, you cannot leave.
Sodium just left.
Before he even answers, he can leave. I'm going to have to say file sharing for the fact it is in a way of trust, but it's more like when they're trying to ban and put serial numbers on hard drives, it's going to become more complicated to do file share, and I think that's going to become one of the major things in the next 5 years. Thank you.
I'd have to say, as bad as it sounds, a command-lighted Windows is going to come in the next 5 years.
Wait, explain that a little bit better.
I think it's going to go, like, since Apple did it and... I think Windows is going to go somewhere to a BSD, Unix, Linux platform, something around there. Not open source, but like that kind of command style.
So you're saying that the command line as the interface?
Yes.
Okay. Nate?
I want to go back to, you know, digital media, copying, file sharing, stuff like that. I saw something in an article a while ago about a pair of headphones having to prove to the computer that they were authorized to play the stream with that they were being fed. And I think we're not going to be far off in a couple years. You know, the industry is moving there.
Tracer?
Well, I expect in the next 5 years you won't see anything on paper anymore. Everything will come electronically, even books, though. Therefore, you can't sit down and read a book on a couch anymore. Therefore, you have to have something to strain your eyes and stare at your screen, stare at a pixel, just to read a word.
Well, more specifically for network computing.
I don't know, okay? I'm a moron.
Say something about digital media control.
Okay.
Yeah, you are.
5 years,
and
yes.
Start, and then finishing with Mr. Forno.
Yes, thank you.
Okay.
Rick. Thank you.
Dr. Forno.
Not yet. Someday, I hope. I think the problem, you know, these characters have actually hit upon it. You know, content protection is a big one. Having broadband availability to everybody who needs it and who wants it to take advantage of the new technologies. Where I'm hoping and hopeful that we'll go is probably not where we're going to go. Again, we're being at the mercy of a big business deciding what's best for us. So, you know, the soup to nuts secure audio path to basically make sure the speakers and the headphones are compliant with, you know, copy controls and whatnot. I'm fearful of that, but that's probably the way it's going to come down the road. But again, give it a week or two, and there'll be a hack around that too.
Just in looking at the future, since a couple of you mentioned sort of things like corporate control of networked technologies, what do you think are the scariest technologies that we're looking at in the next 5 years as far, I mean, specific technologies that are presumably for corporations to control network technologies?
I think the biggest one is centralized logons and having a corporation be your, basically your controlling authority. You know, letting a provider, an ISP or a web hosting firm or a software provider, you know, hold your internet identity and keys and your authentication credentials. That's, I think, a huge risk for privacy. That's probably my biggest fear right now going forward.
You mean like Visa does now?
If I don't want to go Visa, I'll use American Express.
MasterCard.
But I mean, if I have a Microsoft Windows platform, I really can't go to Apple or Linux right away. I mean, a lot of my stuff's still tied up with Microsoft.
It's a little harder to switch OSs than credit cards.
Well, Nate, did you want to expand on the point?
I think we have a certain degree of that today, you know, that certain things, you know, like financially, you don't hold a lot of your own, you hold your own credentials, but they all have to be verified by somebody else. And, you know, as far as networks and stuff go, you don't need a credit card. You don't necessarily need a centralized logon. I don't see that becoming pervasive in 5 years. Common, yes, but not to the point where everyone will have to have it to use the network.
Well, I think your point about centralized logon not being pervasive is less of a function of lack of desire for it as it is a lack of implementation capability. I mean, having a centralized logon system requires you to have a centralized idea of trust. I mean, it realistically, until everybody can trust some single entity, we will not be able to have a centralized logon system that everyone can use seamlessly. And the way this country is built, there will always be somebody unwilling to use that, no matter what we try to evaluate or no matter what we try to do as far as establishing, you know, webs of trust. So, you know, it's a game of playing to the masses, and who's gonna come up with the best solution that the most groups are actually gonna agree with.
I mean, I don't know. Just to respond to that point, just to interject something, there's a pretty strong alternative to Windows, actually many strong alternative to Windows. But does that make the power of Microsoft operating systems any less potent or any less real in terms of concepts of trust?
I think talking about things like having personalized credentials and personalized identity is a vastly different topic than talking about market share of an operating system. I mean, look at the debate surrounding medical records in this country. Okay, when you're talking about somebody's financial capabilities, if there's one thing people care more about than their own bodies, it's their own money. Okay, and so if you think there are issues with legislating, you know, medical records and those sorts of things and people's physical status, as soon as you start trying to catalog their financial status and their actual identity as individuals without physical authentication, you're talking about something even more valuable. And so you're going to see the legislation be even tighter and more restrictive.
I'm going to have to agree with him on that. What scares me the most, basically, with computers is that right now, as we can all see, the internet's getting too big for itself. 5 years ago, the internet was based on people that were interested on computers and wanted to learn more. Now it's based on people wanting to get money and scam and child pornography and all that horrible stuff.
And kidnappers.
And it was based around computers and computer intelligence. Now it's based around people that want to make money, and networking is going to go too far. It's already getting too big. It's going to be to the point where you can network your toaster to your refrigerator, to your oven, so that way you can have your pizza baked when you get home already. You know, it's going to get too big for itself as it is already, and it's just people don't know how to control it. I mean, people that know about computers know how to control it, but most of the people out there don't understand what life is about and what computers are about.
I saw a gentleman in the back of the room kind of shaking violently when he was talking, when Bubonic was talking. Did you have something to add?
Well, I'm not saying America's based on a scam. I'm saying...
Let him finish.
Definitely. Definitely. Like,
I was just only a small subset of the scammers and the pornographers. Actually, 5 years ago, the pornographers in the sex industry, that's what funded the internet to get going.
Right, right.
Now,
well, I mean, you're going to always have big businesses wanting more money and more money. I mean, the thing with Napster, and I mean, like they don't have enough money already. They're trying to sue Napster because they lost a few, what, million, maybe even $1 billion. That's, like, not even a hurt to them. Like, they already made trillions of dollars. It doesn't affect them whatsoever. I mean, the internet, I'm not saying America's based around scam artists. I mean, when people maybe... what they had talked about, maybe Sodium, what he had talked about, scams. I don't find it calling scams where it's like intelligence. I mean, there's a difference between scams and intelligence. When you're setting up a computer site to sell computers and you never actually give the person a computer but you take their check, that is a scam.
Well, you just said that's the predominant use of the internet.
Well, it's not the predominant use. The predominant use will always be the users of the computers, the people that enjoy the computers. But there's always going to be the side where there's scam artists. And, I mean, you can't pass up the big businesses. They're going to always control. I mean...
Not to get into a prolonged debate about the nature of corporate culture in America. Going back specifically, Nate, what technologies do you think corporations are going to be employing in the next 5 years, and how are those technologies going to affect network technologies, how we all use things like that?
I think... network technology is going to go to wireless. Unfortunately, I mean, that opens a world of insecurity, definitely insecurity. I mean, you can sit there and somebody could configure a wireless network over a 3-mile range and people can log on. They can just bring their laptop into like a supermarket and all of a sudden get on their network. I mean, instead of going into a central office and plugging an Ethernet cable into like their jack that's all wired through their walls. I mean, wireless network is just... I mean, it has its advantages, but it also has its insecurities.
Well, I mean, go ahead.
You have to look at the practicality of it, too. I mean, as I said, you know, time and time again, just because, you know, we can throw a wireless network into a supermarket doesn't mean we should. I mean, if I'm shopping for groceries, I'm not going to have my PowerBook sitting there, you know, with my shopping list there, checking with my refrigerator and toaster to make sure I have enough toast and Wheaties in the closet. That's not a problem. I mean, I don't care about that. But the capability is there to do that, but... I mean, is there a real consumer need for it?
Other people might care about that, though. I mean, you got the lazy people that just would rather have technology because it causes them to, like, do less things. And, I mean, who wouldn't want to do less things? That causes people, you know, to become lazy. And with TiVo, I can pause my TV while I answer the door, you know. I mean, TiVo's a great thing, but it's also causing people to become lazy and less efficient towards their life.
Ashray? Yeah. Wait, we had a comment in the back. Go ahead.
Oh, I said at least they're going to answer the door.
I don't know. The door might open automatically when somebody knocks.
And depending on whether that user is authorized to open the door.
They're going to get to have
trust relationships.
But, I mean, what you're talking about is essentially an issue of authentication. I mean, wireless networks, why are they insecure? Okay, well, because we've got poor authentication issues. That is poor justification that I belong on this network. Okay, I mean, wireless works great in public networks that are designed for public use. So effectively, when you're talking about private networks, is the only time you really have to worry about people authenticating and justifying their use for the service. Now you're talking authentication. Then, okay, wireless, now it's open to attacks by sniffing or what have you, or radio analysis, encryption, okay? Those are solutions to those problems. We've got those problems nicked. The hard problem is getting the keys into the right places. Somebody walking up to your door and justifying that they are who they are. I mean, if talking about getting up and opening the door, and then Nate says, well, only if they're authorized to come in the door, you know, and effectively if everybody has some kind of like a wireless device sitting in their wallet somewhere that has an identity key for them, okay, maybe even with a biometric lock on it that they need to, you know, put their thumb on it and it has to match something in order to trigger the wireless device. Now you've got a key that has a network identity directly coupled to a physical identity. And then you carry that with you, and then you can authenticate yourself anywhere that's wireless. So wireless isn't this necessary evil. It's just that in the current incarnations, we don't have the authentication and the encryption and the security infrastructure in place, but the technology is there to do it.
I never said it was evil, first off.
Okay.
Nate, go ahead.
Okay, I wanted to go back to the previous point you said about the internet getting bigger and like common people using it instead of the computer enthusiasts. The exact same thing was said when cars came out. You know, you had these gearheads in there tinkering with these engines and wheels and stuff like that. And when cars came onto the market where consumers could buy them, all you heard the actual enthusiasts saying was, oh no, there goes the neighborhood, you know. The roads are going to be filled with people, drivers who don't understand what they're doing, and the roads are going to be used commercially, and instead of, you know, we're not going to be able to play with our cars anymore because they're not going to be fun anymore. And what was the end result of that? I mean, cars are everywhere now. The internet's the same way. It started off as a hobby, and it's going to be, or networking, not necessarily the internet.
Did cars have a big criminal activity as computers did?
Yeah.
Well, Grand Theft Auto, but do people really have Grand Theft computers?
Saying, well, when you look at the culture of the car in the 1930s, they were very highly associated.
Just gangsters.
People said that cars are evil because it allows these gangsters to do drive-by shootings. Does that make the technology... I mean, looking at specific network technologies, do you think that we're going to be seeing technologies developed more to keep people out, or more to make it easier for people to use things?
Well, I'm not saying that technology is a bad thing. What I'm trying to say is there's always going to be a point where it reaches a recession. At this point, it's at a low where people would rather create criminal activity and have wrongdoings in certain things, like where cars with the gangsters going by and in the movies shooting cops and whatnot. I mean, you're going to expect that when they first come out. Like, computers have just recently got big in the last 4 or 5 years. I mean, that's going to happen when it just comes out, but after a few years, once it becomes normal as it is now, you can see the economy is coming into a recession because people are not learning to accept computers and technology. With that acceptance, people are going to cause criminal activity. You offer a handgun to a person, what are they going to do? They're going to spread it around the people, around the city, and it's going to cause criminal activity, murders, robberies.
Rick, did you want to respond to that?
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, your question about is technology going to be more widely available, or is it more tightly controlled? Basically, I think now industry in general has come to the conclusion that technology, you know, information is out there, and for it to be as pervasive as people expect it to be or want it to be, or as the market is pushing it to be, requires there to be the protections on it to limit it and provide some sort of accountability to it. So I think the answer to your question is that, yes, it will be more pervasive, but at the same time, it will be a lot more restrictive and tied to specific users and identities.
Up front.
This specifically relates to the car analogy with technology. When cars first came out on the roads, the people who were paying the funding for the elected officials were the people who were horse traders and horse breeders. Mm-hmm. They had all the money. They forced legislature. One of them was that if a car came to a crosswalk, it had to fire off 22, shout hello down both ways, then get out, set up a Roman candle in the walkway, wait a few minutes, fire off the 22 again before it could pass a crosswalk to make sure nobody was walking across. If a car came up to a horse, drawn carriage, and a horse was spooked, the driver had a special tarp you would have to pull out and put over the car to camouflage it with the terrain. If the horse was still spooked, he had to disassemble the car and hide it into the brush. These are the laws that we are going to see coming with Napster, with all the new technologies, is people who don't understand the technology are the ones making the laws.
Mm-hmm. We already have laws like this, though.
Yes, but the thing is,
the only way that we're going to get rid of those sorts of laws is by continuing to open it. What forced changes like that to disappear eventually, okay, were that compromises were made. Things like stoplights were invented. Okay, the people driving the cars couldn't just blow through a crosswalk, but now there was a way to signal, okay? That was a standard. Standards were implemented. Open standards that everybody knew how they worked. And everybody said, the solutions were come to in an open environment where people were forced to interact with each other. You've got disagreeing parties, and instead of everybody crawling off into their own little worlds, coming up with either legislation or standards that they don't want to let anybody else participate in, okay, will result in just further impasses, whereas creating open standards will change that. And I think just abandoning it by saying it's a new technology, it's just going to keep going downhill, we might as well give up now, is entirely the wrong approach, because these technologies are important, they're progress.
Okay? Exactly.
And the only way that we're going to get anything out of it is if we keep pushing at them, and if we keep, and you know what? Don't keep going up to the RIAA and saying, you know what, I'm going to make all my CDs now out of MP3s that I've decoded and burned onto a CDR. Because you know what? They won't listen to you if you do that. But if you go to them as a customer, okay, as somebody who has an interest both in your own personal interests, and you also acknowledge that their interests are justified to some degree, only then will there be a compromise that will be suitable for everyone.
I saw Philippe.
Yes.
Well,
one thing that I wanted to tell you about what you were speaking about is that you're speaking about new law which are not understandable and which come up because people don't know about things, and we have to make some effort to open up things. I must just note that the DMCA became a law at the time of open source and open architecture, mm-hmm. and it just at the same time, it's not just having people educated, it's making the interest of people coming before the interest of industries.
DMC.
Well, I think what's interesting with the DMCA is that it's generally referred to as a horrible thing, saying, okay, we can't reverse engineer closed protocols legally. There's everybody looks at it as being incredibly restrictive. You have to look at it from another angle also and say, okay, by closing these protocols, making them inaccessible legally by individuals, okay, it puts us in a place where now new protocols will have to come to rise. If there's one thing we have to learn about all of this open source hubbub over the past few years, is that if you come up with a good solution to the problem, open it up, give it to everyone for free, it's going to win. And so what the DMCA does is it locks those protocols up tight as a drum. All those proprietary protocols are gone. And so for anybody who's got a brain, instead of dedicating the time to sitting there reverse engineering, I mean, I know it's fun. I like reverse engineering too. Okay, but sometimes the time comes around when you've got to come up with something new, you create a new standard, you meet with other people, you meet with people who care about the requisite, or whatever the protocol is, from both sides of the coin.
Okay, create a new DVD. Okay, up to you.
But those sorts of technologies are possible, okay? It's hard, and I'm not denying that it's hard.
You're not a manufacturer, so with all our big muscle of individual being in the open source, you can stress and work as much as you.
The reason why DMCA came into publicity in the first place was because of the problem with the Linux drivers for playing DVDs on our home machines. What DMCA was done, by the way, it was pushed through by the industry with very little input from the developers, the open source community, and the private sector, i.e. us. The result was a piece of U.S. legislation that is very heavily skewed in favor of industry, closed standards, proprietary products. And basically what that simply tells the open source community is, that's great, develop all you want, just don't try to play with our products. Therefore, we will continue to make DVDs according to our proprietary process, region encoded the way we want to, and well, oh well, if you can make it work some other way, fine, but you know, if it takes you 6 months or a year, go for it.
Well, I mean, everybody's getting so upset about the factor of CDs being burned, because that's a loss of quote-unquote money towards the corporations, whereas they want to put, like, just like VCRs, if you go to rent like a video at Mammoth Video or Blockbuster and you try to record it, you can't because it comes out scrambled, black and white, picture goes back and forth. They want to do that with CDs. I mean, the more restrictions you have, the more ways people are going to find a way around it, which causes more and more criminal, I don't want to say criminal activity, but more and more evolution towards the internet society, which could be a good or bad thing. I mean, it's the way you look at things. Where as free source, people are more interested in a free source than rather having to pay for an object that they can't understand. Free source is out there to understand and look at every single architecture and every single problem and analyze those problems step by step to understand them completely. I mean,
well, if you look where this is going, and you look at, for example, the digital VHS tapes. I think I mentioned this yesterday. The ability to record your favorite program off HGTV or broadcast or rabbit ears on a digital videotape, you record it in your living room. You then take the tape out upstairs. You can't play it upstairs in your bedroom watching it with your wife or your girlfriend because the videotape that you've got is tied to the machine downstairs, not the one upstairs. What you've got now is a pure case of industry, corporations, third-party outsiders telling you how you can enjoy something that you're using in your own house, number one. And what that's going to do is force the open source community, developers, creative people, call it what you will, to come up with ways to basically continue to enjoy what they've got today using the technology of tomorrow. If I record something on my VHS tape downstairs, I bring it upstairs, pop it into a five-year-old video machine, I can watch it, play it, record it, do whatever. I want that capability 5 years from now if I have a digital videotape.
Okay,
and if it's not part of the product, I will find a way to have it one way or the other.
But this isn't a new problem. Everybody thinks this is an incredibly new problem with things like Super VHS and you know, DVDs. This has the Audio Home Recording Act exists for a reason. Mm-hmm. The Audio Home Recording Act was the result of 15 to 20 years of constant debate in business, individual circles and special interest groups, and the government. Okay, and legislative bodies finally came up with a solution that said that every blank tape you buy, and every blank audio tape that you would buy, a portion of that price mm-hmm. went directly to a coalition of the record companies. It went straight to a fund that the record companies would cull from. And everybody forgot about that. Mini discs have the exact same thing. Yeah. DAT. There are bits encoded in those signals, in mini disc and DAT, that prevent you from duplicating anything except from the original media. If I make a digital copy of a CD for my own personal use onto Minidisc, first off, every time I buy a piece of Minidisc media, part of that purchase price goes to the record companies directly. Okay. Also, part of it goes to the government, to a government fund. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I've already paid that chunk. Now I've got this little Minidisc. All right. Now let's say my original CD gets scratched up, and I want to make another copy of the MD. Okay. And I go to do it digitally, so I don't get any more loss. Well, I'm SOL because there are bits called the SCMS bits
right.
that sit on mini disc and DAT equipment, okay, that will prevent me, that will say, this is an SCMS terminal recording, and I can never make another digital copy of that, okay? Now, these things have been around for years, and nobody's made any big deal over them until now, okay? And the thing is that compromises have been reached. If you feel that those compromises are in error, then start challenging all the way back, because as long as we try to challenge the current legislation, all that's going to happen is the record companies are going to point and say, precedent.
Well, you know that the Home Audio Recording Act is being challenged by both by the record industry right now, as well as supported strongly by, you know, the consumers in light of DVD, RC2, and SAP, and all the other
protections. But the new protections, all the special interest groups, like us, okay, if you want to take the us and them analogy, all we are asking for is a complete rollover of those protocols. We're not saying, okay, we want to work with you to implement something that will work for everyone. It's saying, we don't want this controlled at all. And the way this country works, that just won't happen. They've tried it before. The government hasn't changed enough in the past 20 years to make the outcome now any different than the AHRA was then. And so it leaves us in a point where we have to realize that what we're asking for isn't going to happen in a legal framework, and that we need to take example from things like the AHRA and evolve new standards that'll work along the same lines.
There's a point to that. Ignorance. People just ignored the law. It was illegal to make copies, just like it was illegal to not cover your car. People ignored it. Eventually, mm-hmm. there's a balance. The court system is not for justice. The court system is to keep the peace. They want everything to be quiet. So when these guys come in, like the record industry comes in, and they've got all this money, and they're making all this noise about this, they'll listen to them, and they'll do what they say. There's a breaking point where there are so many people copying things that it outweighs the amount of noise that the DMs or the Motion Picture Association, the recording industry, are making. Then all the community is making more noise than them. Courts will side that way. And that is exactly what happened with the cars, and that is exactly what happened with tapes. That's exactly what will happen with this. It just takes time.
But how can you put a restriction on knowledge? You can't, I mean, but the way they figured out to put MP3s onto CDs or waves onto CDs is knowledge. When you go to sell that knowledge, that is an illegal activity. But if you have the knowledge to create a free CD or whatnot and distribute amongst people, whereas people still have to buy that CD in order to get the original copy and it's still distributed, the companies are still making money. The knowledge is still being sent out there. You can't restrict the knowledge. That's knowledge is sent there for people to understand what's going on and the reality of terms. When people are selling copies, that's the wrong issue. When people are making the free copies, that's the completely good idea.
You are completely correct. You cannot restrict knowledge. Just like the aristocracies believed that if people read books, they would be overthrown. Aristocracy was overthrown.
Set you free.
That's why they don't like hackers.
Because
they have too much knowledge for today's society. They have too much knowledge for today's society to exist around here.
And they're trying to construct laws to control it because they're losing
England,
control.
Australia restricted hackers. $5,000 fine, 2 years in jail just for one quote-unquote criminal activity, which has turned out to be a knowledge and curiosity experience for those people. They may want to learn more, and they don't have the resources to learn more because everything costs money nowadays.
Let's simplify this really quick before Nick shuts us up. And the idea is not just copy protections, recording, and that kind of stuff, but what this is, and I hate to use the term, but it is a paradigm shift. Mm-hmm. And it's a paradigm shift that, for once, the industry, be it whatever industry, recording, publishing, entertainment, whoever, is no longer in a position of absolute power. There are people who now say, who are now in a position to say the technology is being produced by the consumers, by the general public, the little people, saying here's what we want. We want specific products, be it specific tracks on an album, not just the 12 you ship to us in the record stores. I want 3 of the 12, and I want those only. I will pay for those 3, but I won't pay for all 12. Okay, the power's in the little people, and that has industry scared. They are scared because now they are not in a position to dictate what the consumers and the end users get to see. It's a losing battle.
We had a comment.
Yeah, 2 points. One, if I were curious as to what your intestines were, I wouldn't be allowed to cut you open in work. I mean, there should be a reason.
That's human rights activity.
Exactly.
You can't cut somebody open. That's moral.
Well, no.
There's a difference between cutting somebody open and breaching security. If you cut somebody open, you're not only like killing one of your own. You're like going against everything you stand. I mean, just because you go into a computer system doesn't mean you're killing another person.
It's a matter of ethics.
Yeah, and that's a whole other story. But my other point, which I'll be brief about, was that none of you seem to have addressed this. Maybe you did, and I wasn't here. But the reason the internet is important, the reason that you have people like the music industry complaining about it, is it's the only or the first lossless broadcast system. It's the first time that we have ever been able to broadcast something at low cost with no loss of quality.
Not only that, but it's removed the entire concept of the problem, as Rick was saying. I mean, this is the first time the people are in power, and more threatening than just, I mean, the real paradigm shift isn't even so much us versus them. It's that we're literally challenging the power structure that this country has existed on for many, many years. And what you're talking about this sort of ubiquitous broadcast capability, not only can we now do it lossless, and not only can we now do it easily, okay, and have it be accessible by people all over the world, so it's got infinite distance or near so, but anybody can do it. Anybody with a cable modem, anybody with a DSL line can sit there and run a lossless radio station. And what that does is that removes, it levels the entire playing field to the point that there is no power structure determining what gets broadcast anymore.
It also makes everybody an equal opportunity, where agencies, corporations don't want equal. They just want to think about themselves. They want to think about the greed. They want to think about their life fortune. They don't want people to be equal and have their own rights. They don't want people to think about their own decisions.
Well, I mean, I think one thing that you shouldn't do is shouldn't do is overgeneralize. There's no they. There's no big, huge Illuminati corporate council saying we don't like this. I mean, it's just it's a response to
when people are merging because of a corporation and because of money controlling society. You can't honestly tell me that money does not control society nowadays. What do we base our life on? We base our life on money. If we don't have money, we're not completely happy. Okay, money does make us happy to an extent.
Money's
okay?
Convenience.
Money is honestly evil. Okay.
Well, I mean, it's not money itself is not evil. Money is just a means.
It causes people to think in evil terms.
Right. Well, I mean, the gentleman in the back has been wanting to speak for a really long time.
So is the panel.
So they lay off 40,000 people so they can make more money. So you're saying that's okay?
And read our email.
Firestone lays off 40,000 people.
Yeah. They are the owners of these corporations. How many of the people sitting at this table have shares in at least one of the companies that's responsible for this? Well, no, it's not. Because the way this country is built, you have, by having shares in a public market, okay, even owning so much as one share, you are entitled to all rights of a shareholder in that company. We have government organizations designed to enforce that. The SEC is there for a reason, okay? And so when I look at this table and I see a bunch of people who might or might not have either stock options or a portfolio sitting on Ameritrade or E-Trade or whatever else is the popular one today, you have the power as a shareholder. You have a small chunk of the power. But it is still power, and it's power that's not being used. And all these people in the computer industry who are up in arms saying, oh, you know, we can't do what we want to do, it's because you're not using the power you've already got.
Well, one interesting thing I don't think you're mentioning is the power of the customer.
Yeah.
Who do companies listen to more, the customer?
I mean, the market is the ultimate discriminator.
But you have to keep in mind, too, that just, I mean, most of us are shareholders in some company or other, but if you take a company, a PC maker that decides to make a sound card, we're on the Napster issue, so I'll use that, you know, make a truly secure path from audio from MP3 or CD-ROM out to a speaker that will only work with that PC, that will not work anywhere else, I guarantee you a majority of the American the consumer will say, okay, that's great, it's my new Dell computer, I'll use it, because they're ignorant of the fact of what the greater implications are.
Yes, those but if the general consumer doesn't care, then that's the majority. And this country is built on majority rule. And quite frankly, if the general public doesn't care, then the legislation should reflect that, whether we think it should or not.
I agree with that.
If you believe in what this country sits on, then if that's what they say, that's what they say. If you see the majority of people in this country saying, no, I don't want my Dell computer to do that, then yes, the legislation should go the other way.
Nate, did you have a comment real quick? Over front.
Near lossless.
There is a, and again, using your argument, there is long-standing rules that radio stations are paying for usage fees of their music. When you've got someone just putting MP3s out, they're by-stepping that, and there is a precedent there. And another point I want to bring up when you're talking about the evil corporation, yeah, they are evil, but they do have a responsibility towards the bottom line. If the economy changes, you look at any set of books, the number one cost out of almost everything is always payroll. Mm-hmm. Your payroll expenses, your payroll benefits, all of that will usually be your largest factor in there. And when you have to save costs, that's one of the things you have to look at.
Let me just clarify my position. When I was saying the evil companies, okay, I was saying that I don't. And that's the thing. I was saying that as a facetious comment to kind of go along with the general tone of this panel. If you don't like the way this country works on corporate influence, then don't live here. The only reason why the U.S. is the way it is because the companies have made it this way. If you like that, then you like the companies. If you don't like that, then you don't like the companies.
Oh.
But the industry is not totally blameless.
You can't say not to live here. I mean, because you don't like one thing doesn't mean you can't change another thing.
If you look at the hearings on Napster, I'll make this real quick.
Okay.
if you look at the hearings like on Napster that are in online copyright protections over the past year and a half, you've always seen the us versus them. You've seen the recording industry, Hollywood, the MPA, the RIA, and you've seen MP3.com's president, CEO, Napster, and those folks. For the first time last Monday, you saw in the case of music and online, you saw artists testifying in front of the Hill. Okay, you never saw that before. And what the artists brought to the table in the congressional hearing was that they have problems with the way the recording industry is treating them, their lyricists, their writers, their supporters, and that there is an inequity that prior to Monday, most folks who watch this on C-SPAN never were aware of.
The gentleman on the side of yours has his hand up for a while.
Yeah. I was just kind of going along. You said that input, but like, when was the last time you called Ameritech? I think a lot of these corporations are getting so big that they don't even care what we think anymore.
That's true.
Tell us what to think, you know?
But ultimately, if you don't buy their service, they lose money.
It's what they think based on what matters. I mean, what they think goes. It's not what the customer thinks. Sure, the customer does have an opinion, does have maybe the phone call survey that they call you about that most people hang up on, that most people don't listen to. The corporations are based on what they think. I mean, AOL comes out with new versions because of what they think. Sure, it could be user-friendly or whatnot, but it's based on what they think, not what we think.
The Telecommunications Act of 1996 made a very specific case against what you're talking about with calling Ameritech in that it gave you choice of your local carrier, okay? And when that happened, okay, and local carriers and CLECs were everywhere for about a period of 2 years, and nobody used them, okay? The consumers had a chance, and they didn't speak, okay? Because the majority of the people out there really don't care that Ameritech support sucks, okay? And they don't care that they're getting price gouged way over the price of what they should be. Because to them, it's not worth the trouble to worry about their phone service as long as it's up 95% of the time, or 99 or whatever the, you know, whatever figure you want to use. So we had a chance to talk and nobody used it.
Well, let's look at feature creep in software. Okay. We all use word processors on some platform, whatever it is, you know, Star Office, Microsoft, Apple, whatever. How many of us use more than maybe 40 or 50 features or ideas, you know, product features, okay? I mean, there's stuff in Word and WordPerfect I've never even used, but yet every version comes out.
Mail merge.
Exactly. There are more and more things. The paperclip gets more and more animated, whatever. But the idea is that stuff is getting bigger and bigger, again, contrary to what the consumers are actually using. So it's like, why are we getting a 40 million line word processor when all I'm using is features of maybe 15 million.
Because it's what the corporation thinks. I mean, you got DSLs here running at what, like 100 maybe 28 kilobytes a second, whereas the actual speed of a DSL is 2.8 megs a second, reported in Canada. I mean, you can just see that the businesses are trying to make more money by regulating the bandwidth between what people have by 128 kilobytes. Sure, that's what, like 10 more users they can use for each line. That's so much more money that they gain that we lose.
You've had your hand up for a long time. Go ahead.
All right. This is cliche to say, but we all know the internet consists of information, but there's no certificate of ownership for all the information that's available on the web. And I think what we're seeing now is corporations scrambling Oklahoma style to lay their claim. And I think recording artists are as well. There's no established hard set of rules that regulates who owns what.
Very much so, and that exists with every kind of data, whether it be an MP3, whether it be a video clip, or whether it be your, you know, some doc you wrote for a class. I mean, this brings all the way back to what I said at the very beginning. It's trust. It's who owns what. How do we know you own it? And then only then can you even go into even thinking about compensating one another for the work that you do.
Aaron, you had your hand up for a while.
Yeah, I'd like to hit a few points and go back to how people are treated by corporations and the corporations don't care.
Speak up.
I'm sorry. The corporations don't care about how they treat the customers. And this really goes into kind of into corporation does have to treat its customers right. The reason Ameritech can say, screw you when you call them for tech support is because there is no competition. And then that jumps to the point that Andrew made about the CLEX. It wasn't in the marketplace that people, you know, had their chance and said, we don't care, we just want to go with Ameritech because they give a crappy service, okay? It's not like Ameritech made it really easy, for example, Brooks in Grand Rapids to do their job to wire you up local phone service. It took longer. It was more unreliable. It wasn't because Brooks did a bad job. It's because Ameritech didn't like the competition. Yeah, it's mandated that we'll do this, but we're not going to make it easy for you.
So but that's also why there's legislation against SBC right now.
Okay.
As a result of all of this.
Of course. But legislation always comes. Okay, so what? It's been legislated now, but they've already done their evil thing. They've already done, Ameritech's already shafted, you know, certain CLEX for this.
The whole movement already flopped. It's not going to happen again. Yes. Those CLEX aren't going to have a second chance to make a go at the market.
I was perfectly
they're gone.
And that's a good example for the DSL providers. I mean, you see them going left and right, the little ones, that are falling to the Verizons and the large local telcos just because they can. They own that last mile of cable. And as a result, you're getting stuck with, you know, shoddy service, you know, from your telco that's becoming your local monopoly once again.
I also think there's a regional level to what you're talking about. I'm from the East Coast. I'm from around the Boston area. And I worked for a while at RCN Corporation. Now, a lot of you probably haven't heard of RCN unless you're on the East or West Coast. But RCN is one of the few CLECs that's actually managed to survive since 96. It started as, RCN is Residential Communications Network. That's what it stands for. They started as a breakoff of a cable TV company. And their whole goal is what they did is in order to create a market for themselves, they decided, okay, well, forget this, just the phone service. We're going to come up with a single, they took the concept of broadband to the T, and they're saying, we're going to give you ATM copper into your home in the next couple years. It's going to carry your phone, your cable, your digital television, and your internet service all on one pipe. They added value. They lowered their prices, and they marketed aggressively, and they managed to build a huge base of capital. And from that capital base and from the huge investment that they've gotten from venture capitalists, they've been able to actually lay fiber all up and down the Boston to DC corridor as well as the San Francisco to San Diego corridor. And now they've managed to cover something like 60% of the U.S. population in those two massive markets.
Are they doing that for the consumer or for the business?
Of course they're doing it for the business, but the consumers still get cheaper prices and better service. Because that's what got the customers there in the first place. And then they're taking advantage of the capital that they've constructed to take that last mile back. They're putting fiber on the poles to within a mile of the household. Okay? Do you realize the service advantage of that?
Okay. Aaron, okay.
I think with CLEX, a lot of them have made that jump and kind of almost like a counter business measure to use data services. Our Brooks and Grand Rapids is a good example, but the problem is they're not in the minds of the local people right now. They're selling data services usually to businesses, not a place to follow an example, but they've lost, for at least phone service, and that's how they get their foot in the door in most places.
Right.
But
the concept of CLEX being dead everywhere isn't true.
Okay, go ahead.
Earlier, an analogy was made comparing cars to artists, and I think it was a very accurate analogy because the auto industry brought about a new age in our society, and it, just as the tool and die maker, or the computer scientist today will be similar to the tool and die maker. So eventually, this is going to be supporting a very large amount of people. Many people's lives or livelihoods will depend on the internet. So people are going to have to be paying for the content that is provided to them through the internet, whether it be micropayments to Joe X who writes a web page column, or whether it be a macro payment to a corporation that provides you with a set of services.
I disagree.
Go ahead.
My parents' favorite activity when I was little and gas was cheap was just jump in the car and drive somewhere. Nobody was paying for that content. You know, the pipe was there. The roads had already been laid. The content was the scenery, and we just went and we did, you know, because we could. On the internet, I don't think you're going to have to pay for content so much. There will always be free content out there, and it'll always be pretty cool.
Yeah.
There will be, you know, desirable stuff that you have to pay for, but it'll never be required.
All right, we're running a little bit behind, so just as a closing thought, just to kind of highlight everything that we've touched upon, do you think that the kind of technologies that we've been talking about are going to free people, are going to make people more dependent on X? Andrew.
Just one quick thing before I answer that. And that is that Simon there didn't get to say what he was afraid of at the very beginning of this. And
no
that,
shit.
And it is, quote, motherfuckers reading my email.
So we went the whole panel without a single curse word. Now Simon in the last 30 seconds.
Well, actually, it was me on behalf of Simon. but my answer to your question is that it inevitably will be more free. Information and knowledge have always made people more free than where they started, even if you suffer injustices on the way. And I think that the end result, you know, whether it be in 5 years or 50 years, we will end up being more free, having more power and more flexibility as a result of this technology.
I completely agree with what he's saying is more free because with technology the way it's going, I mean, we've just started to get in the revolution. I mean, we're just now starting to get into the arguments and debates whether this is free or should we pay or should we go to jail for certain activities. I mean, the way you think of technology is based on the person who's thinking about it. I mean, it's just like we're just now getting into the argument and debates, and it's going to take years to accomplish and get over this before we come into a free society and become realizing that everybody is created equal and that everybody does matter in the society to create a bigger and better world for all of us.
Simon.
I'm just saying if the shit ain't free, people like me and Bubonic are going to make it free.
Nate.
Word. Okay, briefly, wireless is going to free the last mile. We're going to see telco empires crumbling as wireless gets faster and better. Let's see. Tracking is going to be ubiquitous. Transparent society. We're going to see, you know, as you said about centralized logon and stuff, everyone's going to know where you are and when and what you're doing, and you're going to come to accept that. You'll be less free, but you won't care.
And AT&T will bring it to you.
Michelle had just one quick comment.
I think one thing when we're talking about knowledge and information being free, we need to teach people what to do with that information and what to do with that knowledge. You can't just open this big door and say, here you go. I think it's very important to teach people how to handle it, how to process it, and what to do with it.
Power with responsibility. You cannot have one without the other.
But there's nobody doing that.
Okay. Sodium, you don't have a closing thought?
Thank you for insulting me.
Oh, crap, Tracer. I'm sorry.
I'll take his time. I'll take his time.
I'm sorry. Tracer, not Sodium. I don't know what I was thinking.
Are you drunk again?
Yeah. Absolutely right. I just lost my train of thought. Brain fart. absolutely right. I mean, simply saying something is bad or wrong and not telling the people why it's bad or wrong is not the way to go. I mean, you know, information can both help and it can hurt, okay? Technology can both help and hurt. A knife can hurt and it can be a tool, either way, okay? The difference is knowing when to use it for good, when to use it for evil. With regards to society in general, being the elder statesman on this panel, that's a scary thought.
Only physically, not mentally.
And yet he's still under 30.
Basically, I'm pessimistic that we are moving towards a much more pervasive surveillance society. The average people are going to go ahead with this blindly, and, you know, not caring, just going carrying out their day-to-day lives, very much like the Matrix. You know, there will be those people, many of which are in this room, even on this table, that will continue to find ways around that to maintain some segment of autonomy from the system. That's a healthy thing, in my opinion.
Legal or not legal?
Autonomy. I think there will always be a computer underground. There will always be a few folks trying to get around the rules and, you know, keeping quote unquote that subversion alive, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. But again, it's got to be kept in balance with the status quo.
Power right, let's to the people.
Okay. What did you say, Andrew?
Power to the people.
Great.
Yeah.
Right now.
All right. Let's have a round of hand or a
I don't get to wrap it up. A round
a big,
hand.
A thank
big
you.
Round of applause.
The panelists are going to be up here for about another 5 minutes. Win NFF's t-shirt. The second round will be in about 5 minutes. Yes, the
I
sober round.
I understand they're raffling off a G4 titanium laptop to the winner, and I want that.
Exactly. And, so I guess we'll see you back here in 5 minutes for
hardware
NFF's
t-shirts. Hardware and job offers are welcome at this end of the